Welcome to the Natural Running Network. We are brought to you by Mio, makers of the world's first strapless heart rate monitor sports watches, and MedHab, makers of RPM Squared, an innovative system of gait analysis that slips right into your running shoes. My name is Richard Diaz. I am your host. Are you a runner? Do you love to get out and challenge yourself? Running your first marathon, or maybe caught the bug of obstacle racing? Well, sit tight, because this is a show you just don't want to miss. I'm with Joe DeSena. He is the founder and creator of Death Race and the Spartan Obstacle Racing Series around the world. Joe, say hello to the audience for me.
Yeah, how you doing, audience? Joe DeSena here. I'm sitting in Boston. My home is in Vermont, and we did a calculation last week. I've been on the road over 250 days, I think, in 2014. It's terrible.
Oh, my God. You know, I don't know how you do it, Joe. I can tell you that I just, in preparation for this interview, I just pull you up, and I saw like a million video clips where you'd been interviewed. So I know this is trying for you, and I'm sure it's going to be, to some degree, redundant. I apologize for that up front, but I am glad to have you on the show.
No, I'm happy to do it. I couldn't get my wife to listen to me, so it's exciting that anybody wants to talk to me for an hour.
All right, so look, I want to start by, I think my first introduction to you and what you're all about was I read an article, and I think it was Outside Magazine, where they were covering the death race. And I talked about that for days. I mean, I thought, man, this is some crazy stuff. And that's still going on, right? You got the death race is still happening, right?
Yeah. Created death race. Well, actually, it's a pretty funny story. Back in 2000, I purchased a URL, peak.com. And back then, I had this idea to create this this global network of adventurists, kind of like the Explorers Club. People that were just doing insane athletic things, climbing Everest, etc. And our first race that we were going to put on was back in 2001 in the British Virgin Islands. And it was 350 miles. It includes sailing, swimming, biking. It was a very, very difficult race. 25 teams of four showed up to compete, about 100 participants. And it's amazing that no one died. It was an incredible event. And really, that is the first time I can recall using this sentence, the death race, in anything. And it came about because I had a team that was organizing the race, and they were setting ropes in one particular island. And the people were going to have to rope climb out of the water up and scale a cliffside. And as they were setting the rope 5 days before the race started, one of the climbers fell and cut his leg. As such, he had to go get stitches. He then showed up in a rowboat with a little outboard motor the next day to check on the other climbers. Fast forward 8, 10, 11 days, when the race was completed and everybody was getting packed up and ready to leave, a couple of the guys came over and said, "Hey, we haven't seen so-and-so since, 10 days earlier." And I said, "What do you mean you haven't seen him?" And they went through the story I just described to you. So we immediately called the Coast Guard. We assumed he'd either found a beautiful woman and ended up on some other island somewhere and was never coming back, or he was dead. And it turned out that he had drifted, that the engine on the dinghy he was on had drifted 150 miles and landed on an undeserted island called Little Tobago, and survived for 8 or 10 days on that island until we found him with the Coast Guard.
Oh, man.
And we picked him up with a helicopter, brought him back to the island where we were, and the first thing he said was, "Hey, guys, can we go grab dinner?" So that was the first time I heard this idea of a death race. And then years later, we got it going in Vermont, my hometown, and it's just been that kind of experience where we just completely break people's spirit and get them to a point where they don't want to take another step forward. And that's where you really find out about yourself and others, right? It's easy to be a good person when everything is going well. Wow. It's harder to be a good person and stay focused and put one step in front of the other when everything's not going well. And for the death race, in 24, 48, 72 hours, we've got to recreate that kind of situation that gets people to mentally break. Look at the guy that was deserted on that island, right? He didn't crack. He was just waiting for dinner.
Wow. I remember reading that, and I thought this was really cool, is the waiver essentially to participate in this thing is, it says, like, you may die.
That's right.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think the lawyers have trouble arguing with that, right? I mean, you're telling them what's going on. You have a chance of dying here, dude.
That's right.
Oh, wow. So I got to tell you, I am absolutely fascinated with this whole Spartan thing. And I'll confess that I've never done one myself. And here I am. I just celebrated my 62nd birthday recently. And I was out in the park this morning and working on the horizontal ladder to try to get that going on. And because I'm a fairly big boy and, you know, I got to be honest, I've had a fondness for single malt scotch and Cuban cigars. It's been not exactly the training palate that might be the case for some of these young bucks like Hunter McIntyre and, the rest. But you've inspired me. Already I'm inspired by this whole thing. And I guess that's the game, right? You're all about inspiring people to get off their asses and do something, right?
Yeah, my father was a workaholic, entrepreneur, maniac, very creative, very forward-thinking, and just relentless. My mother was the same way, but into yoga, meditation, health food, and way before it was cool, and certainly way before it was cool in Queens, where I grew up. And everybody she would touch and start to convince to eat healthy and, you know, not put extra fake syrup on their oatmeal, whatever it was, would start to transform in a positive way. And I saw that happen over the years, you know, over 30 years. And I just wanted to continue that tradition. I wrote people in to just getting stuff done, whatever that stuff may be. Hey, want to go for a bike ride? And I get a guy to ride 250 miles. He's never biked more than 30 miles in his life. And there's just something really satisfying about doing that.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because I was listening to, I've had conversations, I've met Isaiah Vidal. He's been to my place and, I've been working with Hunter, helping him train for the world's championships this coming year. And I met Isaiah and in the course of conversation, and I think even through listening to some of the podcasts that he's done, he talked to me about how he spoke to you about getting to world championships from Austin, Texas to Vermont. And he was complaining that he didn't have the funds, didn't have the money. And you basically spotted him the money and told him, hey, ride your bike. And he apparently didn't think much about it. He said, well, yeah, all right, you know, and just decided to ride his bike to Vermont, having never been past about 25 miles on the bike in a given setting in his life. So I don't know how deep you got in his head or how much he cussed you on the way there, but talking about an inspirational story, you got this guy to do something that's absolutely crazy.
And he got it done, and he's a better person for it. And, you know, everybody says to me, how do you do it? I've never done that before. Well, you put one foot in front of the other, right?
Yeah.
You convince yourself in your mind that you can't go out. I interviewed a rock climber recently, and I don't climb. I'm not a rock climber at all. I have no experience there other than maybe some ropes, climbing ropes. But he said he learned very early on that you have to focus on the 3 feet in front of you. You can't worry about anything else because that's all you control. And I think that's a really smart thing to understand for life, because if you just put one foot in front of the other, you just focus on what's right in front of you, before you know it, you've gone 1,000 feet, and then 2,000 feet, right? And then 3,000. It's amazing how far you can go if you just focus on a little bit in front of you.
Right. Well, I, I've, I've had some interesting opportunities to interview some really, really crazy. I don't even know that the word crazy is appropriate, but people that are just not going to be bound by their limitations and have done some absolutely fascinating things. You know, one being, you know, Charlie Ingle, when I spoke to him about running across the Sahara Desert. I mean, it was like 4,000 plus miles, between 40 and 60 miles running through sand with the wind blowing in your face at about 120 degrees sideways every day. I mean,
I love Charlie. I know Charlie very well.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, we used to race a lot together. How's he doing now? Do you know?
You know what? I spoke to him yesterday, and I actually suggested to him that he get involved in this cruise, and he said he wants to come.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, he's down. He just wants me to confirm details, and he said he wants to come for sure.
Yeah, he's a good story. Even the tough part of this story, what he went through, is a good story.
Oh, I know. I love Charlie, too. I talk to a lot of guys that have done some really pretty amazing things. But, you know, Charlie's the real deal. I mean, he's overcome, you know, the common life obstacles, drug addiction. He got, I think he was wrongly accused and been put in jail. And, you know, he just has a really colorful story. And, you know, he doesn't count himself as any particular, you know, elite athlete. He's just relentless. He's just going to go out and get it done regardless. And I love that about Charlie.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the Spartan race a little bit. Now, this thing's huge, and I have to let me just kind of preface where I'm going with this by telling you that I got involved in the evolution of triathlon really, really early. I used to live on the island of Maui and got involved in producing triathlon events in 1980. And, you know, back then, the fascination of Ironman. At the time, I believe it was still on the island of Oahu and then eventually moved to Kona. I got involved with the people that produced the event, and you know, I was really fascinated by this event. I mean, you've done Ironman. You know, it's no cakewalk. It's a very, very difficult sport. And got involved, produced the event, and eventually we produced an event for CBS Sports on the island of Kauai, which was the Kauai Loves You Triathlon in 1984. But where I'm going with this is that back then the conversation was the sport's going to go pro. Back then, all the athletes that participated were all basically amateur athletes. They did not compete for money. And with the advent of, actually the event we did was the first purse event in the United States. Before that, there was Nice, France. They were giving up money there. Mark Allen was taking all that away from them. But at the end of the day, all this conversation about bringing the event to the Olympics, becoming an Olympic sport, people making a living off the sport, and it was just kind of a shot in the dark. Nobody really knew for sure where it was headed. Is this thing going to fall to the wayside pretty soon because it's just kind of a whim? And here we are, you know, the thing's in the Olympics, and there's guys that are making a living. And I think just in retrospect, looking at this whole thing, where Spartan racing is going, I think it's going to be bigger. I think it's going to be 10 times bigger than triathlon is, simply because of the potential for spectator value. Would you agree with me?
I couldn't agree more. It feels like we're in the first inning.
And the cool thing about it, I mean, we used to talk about, you know the beginnings of the triathlon with Commander Collins and a couple of his buddies in a bar, and I can do this, and you know, well, I can do this, and so it was basically bragging rights over a couple of drinks, and then they went out and, you know, put together a 2.5 mile swim. They rode their bikes around the island of Oahu, and then they ran a marathon, and then there we spawned Ironman, and here you are. You're essentially the same thing. You're going to go down in the annals of history as the guy that produced the Spartan race, which turned into an Olympic event. And you're going to breed a whole new adventure for athletic endeavor. I think that is just absolutely amazing.
Well, it's funny. I'll give you some. I've done, I don't know, hundreds of interviews. I've done articles, videos, and I'll give you something almost nobody knows. A little nugget for your audience is because of Ironman was going to get into our sport when we were about a year old. not even. And they, I forget what they called it, the Primal Challenge, I believe. And they actually grabbed our venue down in North Carolina, and I was sweating bullets because they have the wherewithal. At that point, I was already so invested in this business that it would have been devastating to lose at that point. And it was just, you know, if Iron Man had done it, there was no chance we were going to survive, in my opinion. So we quickly created this founder's story. So, you know, Iron Man's got an incredible founder story when you listen to it about these 11 athletes that were sitting around the bar, and then they came up with this this idea of swimming, biking, running. And so we quickly said, look, we need an authentic story so that we can at least somewhat compete if Iron Man's really doing this. And so we created this story around the founders. And the founders are all buddies of mine. But just like Iron Man, at the end of the day, it was, you know, I don't know how much of the Iron Man story is true. You probably know more than me regarding the founders, whether that's just folklore or what. But I just think it's interesting. No one's ever asked me about it. And just the fact that you've been around that long around triathlon, I thought it was interesting that we used a similar story to try to compete with them.
Well, it was pretty fascinating, and I think this is back. You know, I go back. I really go back, and I remember. You know, my fascination with this, and like, oh man, I think, you know, I was born and raised in Michigan, and the concept of swimming 2.5 miles in the ocean was just no way. You know, obviously you're, you know, conjuring up the thought of being consumed by a shark or whatever. And I remember watching it on Wide World of Sports, and I thought, wow, look what they're doing. And I had no idea at that point in time that I'd end up living in Hawaii and actually producing these type of events and being in the ocean myself and doing these events myself. And lo and behold, ended up getting a call from CBS Sports. They wanted to cover my event. And, you know, because we put on a pretty good show and we brought in all of the best athletes in the world at the time to compete. And you know, and here we are, you know, all this time has gone by. But so, you know, based on my background in this, I'm looking at the Spartan thing, and, you know, my show obviously is coined the Natural Running Network. I've been very dedicated to this whole concept of running mechanics and proper running skills. And, you know, I come from triathlon. I run a diagnostic lab where I do VO2 tests on athletes. I've been doing so for 20 years. So I'm so entrenched in this whole concept of human endeavor and this in endurance. And then here I come. Go ahead.
Where are you physically located?
I'm in Southern California.
In SoCal. Okay.
But
and you have a facility?
Well, you know what? I just moved out of my facility a year ago. I had about a 3,000 square foot facility where it was just basically me working with athletes. And I decided to lower my overhead, and I have a lab set up at my home, and that's where I work now. But, you know, it came to me that really at the end of the day, the asset that I had was not the building, it was me. And for me to spend about $11,000 extra per month to have the building was just fluff. So it hasn't changed the complexion of my business. I still am able to do, and I still do what I do. Athletes come to me all the time. And as I suggested, I work with Hunter McIntyre right now, and I'm helping him to improve his running skills. And actually, I have him coming in on Friday to do a VO2 test. But anyway,
yeah,
so
I'd love to talk to you because we're doing some really cool things. We got a secret project that I think you could be invaluable for.
I would love to discuss it with you. No question. So getting back to the event, we're looking at the potential for being involved in the Olympics, and I've seen just through some of the clips that I've watched you involved in that you obviously are very interested in seeing that occur. So then there's this whole process of standardizing the events. And I'm assuming that given that you're going to get basically one shot at this in the Olympics, you got to pick a distance. Is it going to be a sprint? Is it going to be like a super race? Or is it going to be a long distance race? What do you think?
I would think it's going to be a sprint, is my guess. And I don't know. Again, everything we've done has been, you know, I did a bunch of Ironmans, and I was around that sport. I was super impressed like you were. And so my gut tells me, we gotta emulate what they've done, and I think it's a sprint.
Yeah. Well, now, given that, and this is just a thought that just occurred to me while we're having this conversation, is that when and if it comes to fruition, where the Spartan race or obstacle race becomes an Olympic event, and the Olympic event now is a sprint, don't you feel like that's going to put a slant on the entire complexion of the obstacle racing scene, where most of the athletes vying for an opportunity to get to the Olympics are going to be focusing on the shorter events? Or do you think that because it being a professional sport where athletes are coming to the events to earn a living, which I think is also marvelous, are they going to go for the money, or are they going to go for the Olympic opportunity?
Well, I think you're certainly going to, I mean, you look at a Simon Whitfield, right? Incredible sprint triathlete versus somebody that's competing in the Ironman full distance. I think we have an opportunity to get both, and I'll explain why. I think our stuff, our sport, lends itself to TV more than Ironman does. I think it's hard to watch Ironman or even a triathlon and get excited about television. I would suspect in the next couple of years you're going to see a lot more TV surrounding, hopefully, Spartan and this sport. And so an athlete could migrate towards the Olympics. And I think, listen, if you're a top Olympian, you're going to make money with endorsements and sponsors. And I think there's going to be a bunch of athletes that migrate towards longer distance and television,
right,
which there's going to be a lot of sponsors and money.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know. I mean, you know better than me with your testing lab and your background. But I think you're going to see athletes that could actually compete in both. I think there are some, for lack of a better term, thinner, smaller athletes that are very, very fast that actually could compete and do well in our world championship, which is, you know, a half marathon. But I don't know if they trained properly for it.
Right.
I don't think it's because they did so many sprints this year or 2014 that they failed. I just think they didn't train properly for that distance.
Well, there's no book on it yet. And I know that everybody's feverishly going after trying to figure out what the magic solution is to proper training. But, you know, given, you know, again, going back to the fact that I'm working with Hunter, you know, here's a big guy, very quick in the short stuff, very, very fast, but he's a big guy. And so the longer he goes, the harder it is to support the energy cost that's associated with the longer events. And so that's kind of the bailiwick that we're handed right now, and we're trying to solve that problem. And so I don't know. That's why why I'm so fascinated by the sport, is because it's so uncharted. You know, there's so many opportunities that exist in the whole thing. I mean, from a standpoint of directing people to the right processes, just so many things. But it's just cool stuff, Joe. You did yourself good, man. That's a very, very cool thing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, I understand now that you're about 17 countries large, last I heard.
Yes.
And, you know, my understanding is you need about 42 countries to make an Olympic sport shot.
I do, yep.
How many years do you think it's going to take for that to happen?
You know, there are some days where I think this is going to be easy. There are other days where it's pretty hard. There's a lot of moving parts. The fact that we've got all these competitors nipping at our heels does not make it easier. It makes it harder because at the end of the day, we got to pay the bills. And to pay the bills, we've got to have racers showing up at races. And so we're constantly scrambling to make sure we hit our numbers and we can pay our bills. And if we just had a little more breathing room, we could probably spend more time on the Olympic aspiration. That said, we will get there. It just may not be as fast as I originally hoped.
Okay. So my understanding is, and again, I'm just gleaning information from various points, and some of it might be right, some of it might be bullshit, but, you know, you'll know better than anybody. I understand that, like, we're at about 3 million participants a year right now?
This year, globally, 2014, we ended the year at about 800,000 participants.
Okay.
2014. 2015, we're anticipating 1 million. We anticipated 1 million last year. We came in short about 20%.
Okay. I don't know where I got the 3 million from, but I understood, like, in another quote that I got was 50,000 people back in 2010.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood the question. If you're talking about the sport in general, yes. I was speaking just Spartan.
Oh, okay. All right. So obstacle racing now is, those numbers fairly accurate, about 3 million people participate a year?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Well, then there you go. There's your growth. It's like, it's huge. In, you know, a matter of 3 years, 4 years, the thing has grown in leaps and bounds.
Very accessible sport. You know, you don't have to buy a $5,000 bike.
Well, that's true. And I could tell you, I did my, I was getting ready to say it and I'm almost biting my tongue. I was going to say I did my last triathlon in September. It gave me a pretty good beating, and I spent a lot of money to do that race, you know, and thankfully I have some sponsors that helped me out with various things, made it easier, but it's an expensive sport, you know, and I used to tell people all the time when they're going to get involved in triathlon, I said, well, you don't golf, so, you know, golfing is expensive. But Spartan racing, all you got to do is basically get your chonies and maybe a little bit of rock tape, and you're good to go.
I agree. I have a really good visual when I think of Spartan athlete versus most other athletes. Right? You don't need anything. It's pretty damn Spartan.
Yeah, you don't want to dress up for it, do you?
No.
You're just going to get muddy, right?
Yep.
Wow. So let me ask you, you know, I mean, since you've been around this, you are this. I know it's been something you thought about. What if you were to look at the athlete, if you were to create a clone that is going to excel in this sport, what's he going to look like? How tall is he going to be? What does he weigh? What do you think his attributes are going to be? What do you see as the perfect Spartan athlete?
You know, I think Hunter, like you said, he's an outlier. He's a diesel truck, and I don't think that's going to be the norm. I think the perfect athlete's going to be more compact, probably even a little thinner than Isaiah. But pound for pound, obviously very strong. There's no doubt about it. It's going to have to be fast, right? It's going to have to be a very fast runner. But unique in that they've got that incredible upper body strength.
Right.
And it's pretty. I almost feel like the pond that we should be fishing in is a wrestler. Feels to me like a wrestler that's been cutting weight.
Huh.
Because a lot of these wrestlers, you know, they could run five and change minute miles. They're fast. And it's probably a young wrestler, because as they get better and later in life, it becomes so much more talent. Not that it's not hard work wrestling, you know, in an older age, but I think they migrated to using more talent and less just brute force, whereas a younger wrestler is just working so damn hard, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I know I've just, in my own little world, I've spoke with a lot of guys that are very involved in ultra marathons and ultra extreme events, and they're looking at this pretty hard. You know, Nicodemus Holland, for one, you know, he's been looking at this really hard, and he's looking at it as, hey, I'm an athlete. Here's an opportunity for me to pay the bills. And, you know, ultra marathoning is not a way to pay the bills. You know, just, and I don't want to sound like so much of a capitalist, but it's a lot of work, and you got to dedicate a lot of time. And generally, that means you can't work. You don't have a job, so you got to have the sport, you know, help you survive. And I think Spartan racing has given people an opportunity to make a living while they hone their skills. And so I've seen a lot of these guys that are taking a hard look at it. And you know, then I'm looking at the physiques of some of these guys and what they're going to bring to the table, and whether they are going to get a harsh surprise when they face some of these obstacles that are not traditional in their sport. So it's kind of fun to watch, and I think you're probably spot on with this whole concept of wrestlers, because they're built, they're strong, and you know their tendency is to put some cardio in to keep their endurance up. So that might be it.
Yeah, I think it could be.
So, is your relationship with Reebok now? Is Reebok part owner or the sponsor of your series?
Reebok is a sponsor of the series. They got in when no one wanted to. They were pretty savvy in getting into hockey when no one wanted hockey, and getting into CrossFit before it was exciting. And they caught us certainly at a time where we needed serious help. And so they got a great deal, but they've been great, great partner. And then NBC came in, obviously, to help make Reebok's investment worthwhile.
Yeah, that's a great fit. And I had not noticed, and again, I don't chase it around so much to really know, but it seems like they're like the only product sponsor involved with the Spartan series right now. Is that true?
I didn't hear the question. Repeat that.
Well, my question was, are they the only product sponsor involved with the Spartan series?
As of now, they are the most significant. I'm scrambling here, thinking quickly. Who else we have that's an actual product? I mean, obviously we had Core Power, which is a drink. But they're unique in that they're the only sponsor that was willing to actually make Spartan products for the sport. So that's made the partnership incredible, right? Where I could actually sit down with them and we can make specific tools these athletes could use. I remember when we created the shoe, it was up in the air as to whether or not the shoe would really make a difference. And one of the most important attributes for me was I didn't want people to have to throw away their shoes after doing one of these events. And they did it. They created a shoe that cleans off in about 5 seconds, and it looks brand new.
Wow, that's good stuff.
And has all the technical properties that you need to climb a rope and run in mud and low profile, so you're not twisting an ankle. And so, and we're creating tons of gear around pants, shorts, shirts, specific to the sport. So that's been exciting because if you think about it, typically a sport this young doesn't get that kind of attention.
No, it sure doesn't. It sure doesn't. Yeah, and you know, I mean, if you think about it, even another way to look at it is look at soccer in this country. How hard it is for soccer to get a foothold in this country, and even the athletes to make the type of living that is garnered in other parts of the world. And that's such a huge, huge sport. And I mean, it's involved in all the schools. It's a big deal. But still, from a growth perspective, it's not anywhere near the rate in which the Spartan racing is growing.
No, I agree. Just hang on 1 second. Sorry for your audience. I got to do this. I need about 1 second to walk to a different room.
No problem. So, you know, again, while we're waiting for Joe to get back on, all you runners out there that are listening to this, you might want to take a look at this. Spartan racing is a pretty cool thing. Obstacle racing, it helps you to round out your strength. And a lot of runners that tend to be slight of build, essentially, T-Rex is going down the road, no arm strength, no upper body strength whatsoever. From a standpoint of longevity and health, I think that this global approach to training is a big deal. I think it's important. Four thumbs up endorsement is...
That's a question I have for you. I go back and forth. When you look at some of these sprinters on, an Olympic sprinter, they are monsters. Right, male or female, their upper body, they look like wrestlers. And versus you look at a marathon runner and they just look anemic. And so my question to you is, wouldn't the runner be a little bit faster having a total muscle tonality throughout the entire body?
Well, that's a tough question to answer. I would suggest that there's a strength-to-weight ratio that is premium. relative to the distance. And I know that from a standpoint of, for example, establishing a world record at the marathon, you know, everything is working against you if you're exceeding, as a male, 130 pounds. So given the guys that are killing it now, these African runners, if you look at their genetics, they typically run at about 125 pounds at about 5'9". Their bodies are more capable of dissipating heat. They're generally conditioned to pretty much any environment they've got to contend with. Their energy costs are lower. There's so much efficiency associated with the way they're built. So it's a tough question. I think that for a middle distance runner, probably having a little bit more muscle would be a value. But the longer it gets, the slighter of build you're going to need.
Got it.
As a matter of fact, I'm involved with a company that Michael Johnson is involved in right now. As a matter of fact, I'm supposed to do an interview with him, I think, next week. You know, and he still holds the 400-meter record, world record, and has had it since, I think, 2000. And just recently had the 200-meter record taken away from him by Usain Bolt, you know, within the last few years. But you look at the builds, you're right, these guys. But if you look at their training regimens, too, I mean, these guys are lifting a lot of weights, a lot of deadlifts. They're doing a tremendous amount of heavy lifting in order to promote that power. So I think that's pretty much in keeping with what's going on with CrossFit and the transition from CrossFit to Spartan racing. So it's a nice fit.
Yeah, I agree.
So do you do a lot of CrossFit yourself, Joe?
I actually don't. I feel like this is going to sound terrible, and I'm sure I'm going to get a bunch of hate mail and laughter about this. I feel like I invented CrossFit, to be honest with you. I used to do a workout back in the late 80s, early 90s we called the prison workout. And everybody at that time, you know, was going to gyms and lifting weight on traditional benches and squat racks, and because we all wanted to get a little bigger. And I didn't have the time to or the inclination to do, you know, 12 reps, 8 reps, 6 reps, take a break, do chest 3 days later. And I said, if we're going to do this, we should do the entire body. We should be restricted to 1 hour, and we should do no less than 20 reps on an exercise. And there should be no rest from set to set or body part to body part. And so we used to do, for years, 3 days a week, I was about 120 sets. So, like, it would start out on the squat rack. We'd do, obviously, lighter weight, 25 reps, immediately run over to leg extensions, leg curls, and calf raises. And you would do that circuit 4 times with no rest. You'd immediately go to the shoulder bench press, military press, and you'd do drop sets. So you'd go like 30 reps down to 20, down to lateral raises, front raises, rear delts. You'd immediately go from there to the pull-up machine where they had, you can get assistance. So you'd go to failure, you'd get some assistance, go to failure, get some more assistance, go to failure. You'd immediately go to dumbbells to bench. It was, I had guys, the reason we called it the prison workout, I had guys just out of prison were the only ones that would do it with me. And talk about results, you never saw anything like it. It was basically CrossFit times 4.
Wow.
You had a, it would have been more fun getting eaten by a shark than going to the gym. It was so painful.
You know, I owned health clubs for a while. We used to do a lot of circuit training, and we when this what's it called, double concentric exercise, these machines that push air. I had a circuit of that equipment, and we used to push people in there, and essentially the same type of thing is just basically keeping their heart rate through the roof the entire time for about 30 minutes. And you know, we had the Concept 2 rower in the middle of the floor. I had a bull whip that I used to encourage people during the class. And
I love it.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I mean, people would get sick. They'd throw up, and it got real popular real fast. The more people that threw up, it seemed like the more popular it became. So I'm no stranger to intensity, especially when it comes to doling it out. So this stuff is all good. You know, I really, again, I don't want to sound like a puppy with this, but I like where it's going. I think it's a big deal. And I'm encouraging people while you were changing offices, I gave a little plug saying that, you know, runners that listen to this show, that they're stapled in life where exercise is concerned, is getting out in the morning and doing their 5 or 6 mile run or gearing up for their next marathon or what have you. It's kind of shallow. I mean, you could be getting so much more for your body if you indoctrinated some effort in your upper body and to develop some strength in your shoulder girdle and your lats and, you know, get after some of these more dynamic movement patterns. And, you know, from a standpoint of longevity and health and wellness, I think it's just a better thing.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. So is there anything in the pipe that's unique? Well, just for the sake of the audience and those that are new to this, at the end of the day, the Spartan series is broken into three components, right? The sprint, the super, and the beast, right?
Correct.
So the sprint is commonly 3 miles. I say commonly because the distances can vary, right?
It could vary a little bit, yes.
And then
depending on terrain.
Same thing with the super. What is it? Between 6 and 8 miles, something like that.
Closer to 8.
Okay, and then the beast is traditionally 13 miles, half marathon?
Correct.
Okay, and then I also understand that the obstacles in these events change from year to year. You know, somebody gets a notion, say, yeah, you know, let's put the hole over here instead of the rope. You know, you can change this up at whim, right? You know, the people expect that, right?
Absolutely, they do, and that's why we I feel like you got to get out of your comfort zone to really grow, and so that's the goal there. But the problem is, it's like a bad virus where they start to learn the antibiotics,
right.
And that's what's happening to our participants. They're starting to know our tricks.
Right, and I think you coined the phrase somewhere along the way, obstacle immunity. Right, you're trying to avoid this obstacle immunity where someone gets it so dialed in that they just basically know what to train for and what kind of things to expect when they show up.
That's right.
So, do you guys like sit down with a beer or two and just sit there thinking, all right, how about if we take a hatchet and, you know, throw it at somebody and they got to duck it? I mean, do you sit there and just, I can imagine what events or what obstacles got tossed because you just figured it was just a little outside the box. Do you have those meetings?
It had to be athletic in nature.
Okay.
That was important. And, you know, everybody contributed. We got a bunch of great employees that have been with us from the beginning. And, you know, when you're running a business, as you know, you can't think of everything. And some of these folks came up with, like, the guy that came up with the spear throw, obviously, the Spartan race should have a spear throw.
Right.
And that is just an awesome obstacle. It's really a burpee maker.
A burpee maker in that you can't, if you're not trained with the spear, you're going to end up doing the burpees?
Exactly.
Well, that's another thing that I've been getting really involved in these days is I'm making everybody do a buttload of burpees.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Burpees are an ultimate exercise.
I think I agree with you. So I want to talk about this cruise. Now, you guys have this Spartan cruise coming up in March. Can you give us a broad stroke of what's all that's about?
Yeah, so the idea was Demon Spartan's party. And could we put together a cruise going to a private island that is all, you know, athletic the way our whole philosophy exists around? It's healthy, which again is our philosophy exists around, and but yet has a party element to it. So we're going to meet down in Miami, and we're going to get on a cruise ship, and it'll be like no other cruise ever taken. I mean, for all you know, because you're coming, I may have you swimming alongside the boat.
Well, you know, I don't mind swimming in that ocean. I'm having a little trouble swimming in the ocean in L.A. It's just too freaking cold, you know. And I know you're thinking, suck it up, or what's the term, Spartan up. and just deal with it. And I did. I mean, I did. I'm not a bad swimmer. But I could see you standing there saying, hey, you know what? Set your drink down for a minute. Jump in the ocean and see if you can keep up with the boat. We'll meet you at the island.
I read an article this morning that said it was the Athenians that came up with the hot shower and that Spartans always took cold showers. And once that technology migrated over to Sparta, that's ultimately what crumbled that civilization. So you better stay in that cold water.
Oh, well, you know, my heritage is Cuban. So we're dipping into my lake there, buddy, when you start talking about the Bahamas and all that down there. So you got this race is going to go off. It's going to be a sprint race on this private island. And basically, you're trying to corral all the baddest people you could find to go out there and participate in this. How many people do you expect to show up for this event or on the boat?
I don't know how many Isaiah Vidal's are going to actually just kayak over or swim there. That's why we're not releasing the island.
Yeah.
But we're going to have about 2,000 people on the ship. And you're right. I want the baddest male and female athletes from every sport to be there, because wouldn't it be awesome to bring everybody under one roof for a few days?
Yeah, you know, I can't even imagine what that's going to be like. I can't even.
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of cool about it is that when you get all these people, I mean, I can imagine just, you know, somebody is sitting there by the pool having a beer and, you know, I understand Dean Karnazes is coming.
Dean's coming, yeah.
Yeah, so here you got Dean running around the deck, you know, to making you dizzy watching him run around the deck. And it inspires you to get off your butt and, you know, pop off some burpees or something like that. And it's like nobody's going to rest. It, you know, instead of being like this casual cruise kind of thing, you know, people are going to be trying to climb up the smokestack or jump off into the ocean. I feel sorry for the crew.
This is a no-rest cruise.
Unbelievable. And so the race on this island that remains to be named is going to be, you got $50,000 in prize money?
We're giving away $50,000 in prize money. And we're going to have a bunch of speakers speaking about nutrition. And hopefully you'll speak for us. We'll talk about exercise, physiology, and I just want to teach a bunch of people and get people excited about health and wellness in a most unlikely setting.
So let me give you a thought that I had, and I kind of laid it out to you briefly in an email. Is I thought it would be really interesting to get some athletes, you know, grab a few of them, and put them on a treadmill. And you know, the treadmill on the ship's not going to be able to tap. It's going to tap out at probably 12 miles per hour. So we're going to have some external load, maybe some weight vest, maybe put like 50 pounds on their back and maybe neck it down a little bit for the women. And then do a VO2 test to failure.
Let's do it.
And then we'll find out who's got the biggest VO2, and then find out who's got the quickest recovery relative to intensity. So...
You should do a call out to every athlete around the globe. If they're a high-level enough athlete, obviously the cruise is on us. So let's get out, let's get that message out. But I should try to get some wrestlers there. We should compare everybody to my theory.
I think we could do the research. We could figure out what it's going to take to be the main guy, right?
Yeah.
I spoke to, you know who Michael Wardian is?
No.
Michael Wardian is a monster. He's basically an ultra marathoner, but I think he's the kind of guy that has got the salt for this. I asked him if he's interested. He said he's down if we can hook him up. He's just, I'll give you the accolades, but he's a monster. He's been all over the world, anywhere from 5K to ultra marathon, mountain racing. And he looks like he might have the juice for it. Got a couple guys like that. Nicodemus Holland said he'd be up for it. As I told you, Charlie said he's up for it. I got a guy from Southern California that's a paddler. You mentioned to me paddlers. And,
yeah.
You know, this guy every year paddles from Long Beach to Catalina, which is essentially a marathon, gets to Catalina and then runs a marathon around the island, gets back on the board and comes home. And he's about 50 years old. I ran it by him, thought, you know, because I thought that'd be kind of flavorful. Somebody that's kind of a water sport, pretty tough little guy.
Let's get rowers too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll look around. I know some people, and, you know, those of you that are listening to this now, you're going to have to act quick. You're going to have to get out to me or reach out to Joe at Spartan Racing and let us know what you're all about, because we're looking for tough guys. We're looking for tough girls. We're looking for the people that want to stand up and show their worth and possibly earn a little bit of money and, you know, make their bones. And, you know, a lot of people – go ahead.
It'd be really interesting. The person with the best VO2 max may not win the race, and it would be interesting to look at that.
Well, I don't think they will, to be honest with you. It really comes down to efficiency, because you're going to find that the guys that have the biggest VO2s are traditionally going to be the guys that are a slighter of a build. I could tell you that I'm doing a VO2 on Hunter on Friday, and he's, you know, by no, I don't want to take anything away from him. His VO2 is going to be pretty high, but relatively speaking, he's not, I would like to think, or I'd like to believe that he's not going to hit 80s. And you start talking about guys like, I don't know if you know Joseph Gray, but he's a, you know, he's a world champion mountain racer, just a stud. You know, I'm sure he's up in the 80s, but, you know, the horizontal ladder would take him out. I did an interview with Max King the other day, and here's another guy that's been looking at obstacle racing and coming from ultra racing. And, you know, his own comments to me was that he felt that he didn't have the type of juice in the short stuff that someone like Hunter has, because he said his grip strength is gone by midway through the event. You know, he can run like hell, but after having to use his hands and carry his body weight or you know, carry things in his hands for a long time, his grip strength is gone about midway through a race. I don't know. It's interesting. It's just fascinating to me, quite frankly. And it'd be fun to find out, you know, what that all shakes out like. But just for the people that are listening, the cruise is March 6th, right?
Yep.
Leaving out of Miami. The details of the cruise can be found on give them the URL, Joe.
Just go to Spartan.com.
Spartan.com will have the information. They can find out everything they need to know about the event. If someone feels like they have some special attributes that would cause them to get a free ride, you can reach out to me and let me see if we can filter through it. They can connect with me at diazhumanperformance.com, or my email is diazhp@verizon.net, and I'd be glad to chat with whomever feels like they deserve a shot at the championship. Someone wants to be a contender, let me know, and let's see if we can get you involved. Listen, Joe, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. I think we're going to have a lot of things to talk about in the coming future. You've definitely got my attention, and just love having it.
No, this is awesome. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it, Joe, and we're going to speak soon. So let's go ahead and let you get back to your lunch, and have an amazing, I was going to say weekend. I'm usually doing this like on a Friday, but have an amazing rest of the day.
Thanks for having me. See ya.
All right. Take care, buddy. Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.